If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, folks, you are listening to Planet Porky, or should I say, welcome to the latest edition of Planet Porky. I am the Porkmeister. With me in the studio today, delighted to have with me Leslie Ann Jones.
I'm delighted too. Thank you.
Now, Leslie Ann, you mentioned a little bit about the state of my heart a couple of podcasts ago, and as I said, I never talk about my health. I don't like to mention it and all that kind of stuff. However, that has prompted a few inquiries. And so, just to let everybody know, a brief resume is that I had acute heart failure 15 years ago. I was on the heart transplant list. Everybody knows this. And eventually, I took myself off because life had come to a standstill. Took a bit of a risk. But I've been very lucky. And I've got through over these last 15 years. Every now and then, I get a dip because you have to be quite ruthless in your discipline of your life. You're not supposed to drink alcohol at all. I do have the odd sherbet because in the business we work in, it would be impossible not to. And sometimes my exercise regime slips because I simply haven't got time to walk, you know, 20 or 25 miles a week, which I have to do to keep in shape. And the other sort of things, now that I've got diabetes, you have to watch sugar intake, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, a bit of a dip at the moment. I'm going to put all that right. And I thought I'd just let people know that things are changing all the time. For instance, I have a new consultant, Dr. Banner. Dr. Nicholas Banner became mildly famous through my work on the radio when I was mentioning him at Harefield Hospital, where I'm an outpatient. And Dr. Banner's now retired, but he's easily the man who saved my life. When I was at a very low ebb and was admitted to Harefield Hospital, and at one stage, given days, to live, if I hadn't immediately recovered when they pumped all sorts of fluids out of my lung and thoracic chamber and all that kind of stuff, I put that down all to Dr. Banner, who's now retired. I've now got a new consultant. And it's interesting in conversations how all the time, new treatments are coming on board. Now, this is not to say there's any miracle cures, but for instance, what's that stuff they do when they take all the cells out of your blood and then pump them into other parts of your body? Stem cell. So stem cells is something that's being pioneered and looked at.
Are you still on the transplant list?
No, I took myself off. And once you take yourself off, you're off.
Okay.
Because there's an awful lot of people who need transplants in this country.
So we can't get your heart anywhere else.
No, well, you could. You could go to America and pay, you know, a couple of million dollars for a heart. But then if you came back, quite rightly, the NHS wouldn't treat you here because they had no control over your treatment in America. They can't interfere with it here. You know what I mean?
There's a big scandal as well, a global scandal, regarding the sources of these organs.
Well, in this country, yes, you're right. In this country, it's one thing which everybody supports the nationalisation of. That is the, you know, the transplant system, because obviously you can't start trading in organs. But if you're talking about developing countries selling organs, that is a scandal.
Oh, called the red market in the Indian subcontinent.
Yes.
And people will actually sell members of their family for their organs to be harvested.
I know, it's a terrible thing. And of course, you'd never get involved in that. But stem cell treatment is something which is now being researched. I mean, stem cells can, if you get it right, and a colleague of mine is having treatment with stem cells on his knee cartilage because he's a former footballer at Warner Way. Your father will have known all about that sort of thing. In those days, the injuries, they just used to give you an injection and tell you to keep playing. You know, it just wore away. But the other thing that's come up, and I'm quite excited about this, is a report I've got here from one of my medical journals. For Britain's 1 million heart failure patients, hope is often in short supply, but thousands are soon to benefit from a breakthrough pill that dramatically improves symptoms and boosts survival. New hope comes in the form of a £35 a month drug called dapagliflozin. Dapagliflozin that is already given to diabetics, and as I'm a diabetic, that will have a double purpose, to reduce blood sugar levels, but could now be repurposed after astonishing trial results. University of Glasgow cardiologist Professor John McMurray, who has led the new study, said no treatment has ever had such a large impact on the quality of life and symptoms. So I think all that's quite interesting stuff, you know what I mean? The situation regarding my heart, which is very interesting, is that for the first few years after I came out of hospital, I was able to go back every 6 months for a checkup, and it got progressively better as my exercise regime got better. And then they put it back to 12 months and then 18 months. And now it's been 3.5 years since I've gone in. And it's nobody's fault. It's just that because so many people are living longer in this country, more people are having heart problems, and therefore the gaps to go and see consultants like Dr. Banner now are few and far between.
So you need to be seen more regularly so that they would keep a better eye on your exercise regime and your eating habits and that kind of thing.
Well, if you know that you've got an appointment coming up to go and see somebody who's a brilliant doctor.
So you need one every 3 months.
You won't get that because there's simply not the capacity.
Private doctor?
Yeah, maybe.
But you could afford it?
I can, but then if you go to a private doctor...
The NHS will see you, provided your private doctor is operating in this country.
Yes, but the diagnosis by the private doctor might be at odds to the consultant at the
I had two of my three children privately, and all my aftercare was on the NHS.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any difference. Yeah. They all overlap here.
Okay.
You should check it out, Mike.
Well, it's just one of those things.
The
reason
worry
we're talking
about
it is because I've had so many inquiries from people asking what's going on. That is what's going on. But folks, believe me,
we're going for a very long walk after this.
But I'm very optimistic, and I always say to myself, okay, we've hit a bump in the road here, but don't worry, we'll get it better. So that's not depressing at all in any sense. It's an uplifting thing. One thing that has depressed me, I know it's depressed you lately, Leslie Ann, is this ghastly situation in Cyprus regarding this poor girl who I am certain was attacked on a mass basis by 12 Israeli youths. But now, you know, there is an international political wrangle about who is the guilty party here after she was coerced into admitting she'd made it all up.
There was a very interesting development in this story this morning where a handwriting and grammar expert has analysed her statement, retracting her accusation. And all kinds of grammatical errors were made, suggesting that the police dictated this statement to her and that she was forced under duress to write it down.
That's right.
Things like doing sexual intercourse. We wouldn't say that as English people. We would say having sexual intercourse. The use of the word apartment instead of flat, that kind of thing. She's 19 years old.
Yes.
She hasn't been exposed to foreign cultures.
No. Nope.
She would have no reason to make that kind of mistake.
No.
So I am absolutely on her side. I believe
I'm
she was raped.
On her side.
And I believe that we should all boycott. I absolutely love Cyprus.
Yep.
I've got my oldest friends in the world who live
there.
It's a gorgeous place.
Yeah, yeah.
But we should all boycott the country and Boris Johnson should be dealing with this now.
Well, Boris Johnson has dealt with it, and to that extent it's in abeyance now in a sense. But what people didn't seem to know, you say to yourself, why would the Cyprus authorities do this? Funnily enough, they have a huge alliance with Israel.
Exactly that.
And let's face it, Israel don't have a lot of friends in that part of the world. They don't want to upset the Cypriots. The Cypriots don't want to upset Israel because Israel, of course, are a very wealthy country. They're funded by the United States. A lot of that money goes to Cyprus in terms of bases. We have RAF bases there from this country. So it was a huge diplomatic problem, but a really, really horrible way to give an impression of your country around the world. And you're so absolutely right. If you're a holidaymaker and you're going on holiday, the last thing you want to be worrying about is whether or not the authorities are honourable people. And if they're not honourable, don't go. I totally agree with you. I totally agree. Last time, I've never been to Cyprus. I've had no reason to go there. But a couple of members of my family went a couple of years ago, they tell me it's full of Russian billionaires.
Well, there is that, especially places like Limassol.
Right.
So you've got to be a bit careful where you go.
Yeah, okay.
Also, Ayanapa,
yeah.
Although it has got a very beautiful beach, it's got...
Ayanapa's isn't it...
It's Torremolinos, it's Magaluf.
It's all about stag parties.
It's beautiful
things,
beach, beautiful sea there, yeah, but the hotels are like department stores.
Yes.
And it's all a bit rough at night. You wouldn't choose to go there. Mm. Paphos is a better bet.
Yeah, is that right? Paphos, yeah. Well, as I say, I'm not great on the East. So the only other place I've ever been to in the East is Singapore, which is great, but it's very septic. No, what's the word I'm looking for? Very sanitised. It's very sanitised, you know. I mean, everything's so clean and all that kind of thing. And you have to watch yourself on the streets, even talking loudly and all that kind of stuff. Not that it's a dictatorial place, but the standards of personal behaviour are very, very high. You know, you get arrested for chewing gum and all that kind of stuff, you know, which is quite right, but you don't feel too comfortable there.
My eldest daughter's in Thailand at the moment.
Right.
My heart is in my mouth, I have to say.
Well, funny you should say that. The reason I don't like the East is I don't like heat, and a lot of these places like Thailand are very hot and all that. But I don't like the culture and I don't like the food, you see.
Oh, I love Thai food.
Well, I don't mind Thai food.
A Thai green curry? Are you kidding?
No, I don't want to eat it for a week or two. All my instincts are West. I prefer the weather in New York and Washington because they have different temperatures in summer and winter. Excuse me. I prefer the food because I like hamburgers. I prefer the culture because they speak English. You know, I'm very sort of Little England.
You're
like
quite
that.
Predictable in
yeah,
that
I'm very
way.
Predictable.
Yeah, yeah.
But funny you should say that, at this very moment... My niece is in Vietnam. Now, she was so thrilled. She went just after Christmas, right? We drove her to Heathrow and she flew out there. So quite a long holiday, extended holiday. She does very well in business in this country. She's a surveyor. But she's gone to Vietnam and with some friends. And she's an explorer and all that. I would be fascinated to go to Vietnam if I was going to go to anywhere over there just to see how the country shapes up today after the war. I mean... You know, it's only 30 years. No, when did the Vietnam War end? In 75, was it? 74?
Yeah, it's less than 40 years, isn't
it? It's less than 40 years. It's probably 70,
it's
actually.
It's a big holiday destination
now.
Oh,
70, because of John Lennon's famous record. Yeah. War is over if you want it. So it's 70. So that's nearly 50 years ago, isn't it? Yeah. But just thinking that time, you know, millions of Americans now apparently flock to Vietnam because it is one of those countries which is growing at about 10% a year because you start from nothing, the boom comes very quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, would you fancy Vietnam?
Maybe. There are these quite comprehensive guided tours that you can take.
Yes.
Pretty expensive trips.
Yeah.
You know, thousands of pounds a head. But there are decent trips that take you from a different location to another location and will take you to the famous caves.
Yes.
Where, of course, all those people were herded and so on.
Oh, dear.
So a lot of it is war history.
Yeah, all of it's war history. You're absolutely right. Yeah, a lot of it is war history. Right, now then, so that's historical and all that. Now, I'll tell you what I'm going to talk to you about, right? You know a lot more about this than I do. So the new album charts have just come out, okay? I'm going to say that it's a review of who bought albums in this country last year, okay? I don't want to go back to last year and all that kind of stuff. But the amazing thing, excuse me, amazing thing is, when you and I were at an album buying age, say in, you know, our late teen years, early 20s and that, you bought an album because a group had just released it. What's happening now, and you are probably aware of this, but I wasn't, is that actually, because albums are now downloaded and not bought in shops, that actually Queen can be top of the album charts today because a new generation of youngsters have just discovered them and they've downloaded them all.
Yeah, it's common.
It's all historical now.
It's
nothing
common
to do with new albums.
I did know about this because I was having a Christmas lunch with my very dear friend, Brian Bennett, who's the drummer in The Shadows.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Cliff Richard and The Shadows are back in the album shows.
That was called Foot Tapper.
But they're back in the album charts.
No,
Brian's 80 in February.
Joking.
No, I'm not. I'm absolutely not. I even wrote down the name of the album, which is, she says, rifling through her notes.
Yeah.
Bear with me,
folks.
But,
I mean, when did they make this album then?
Oh, It's called The Best of the Rock and Roll Pioneers.
Yeah.
You've also got Rod Stewart, The Who, Bing Crosby,
yeah.
Elton John and Queen on the same chart.
So all in the current album chart?
All in the most recent album
chart. I
think
Rod has actually put out a new album that got to number one before Christmas of ballads, hasn't he? Or something.
Yeah.
Was it ballads?
He usually puts one out, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, yeah.
But it is because, I mean, if you can imagine today's crop of superstars,
yeah.
the modern superstars, you've got Ed Sheeran,
yeah.
Adele, Louis Tomlinson, Harry Styles,
yeah. Yeah.
Billie Eilish, who's new on the scene.
Yes.
Can you imagine these people, these artists,
yes.
being as big in 50 years' time as they are today?
Right.
And most young people, my own kids included,
yeah.
admit no.
No, okay.
Because they're not going to be the yeah. kind of heritage acts that we have
right.
bred from the past
right.
and that we still cling to because nothing has come along to eclipse it.
Well, I think you're absolutely right because I'm just reading this report from one of my journals. Anyone looking at the top 20 album chart for last year, 2019, which has just been released, may wonder if they're having an episode of Deja Vu, okay? For the first time, the annual chart contains more releases from previous years than freshly produced work, in a sign that albums are becoming increasingly irrelevant to music consumers. While the top of the chart featured albums from Lewis Capaldi, who's he?
He's a Scot. He's an amazing artist. Got a very deep kind of resonant voice.
Is he the son of Jim Capaldi, by any chance, who was a member of Cream?
I don't think so.
Was Jim Capaldi, Ginger Baker and Eric Clapton. I remember that, yeah. Oh, he made a song called Love Hurts, Loves. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
Love Hurts. That was Jim Capaldi, yeah. Right, so it says featured albums from Lewis Capaldi and Ed Sheeran that were released throughout 2019. The bulk were from 2017 and one was even from 2001. The third most popular recording was the soundtrack from The Greatest Showman, released in December 2017.
Oh, yeah, all the kids love that.
Who
and
was
they,
that?
The Greatest Showman is Hugh Jackman.
Oh, yeah?
It's about the Barnum, P.T. Barnum experience.
Okay. Fifth and sixth.
Tell me you've seen that film.
No, I haven't.
Oh, you should.
Barnum? No,
yeah,
I haven't.
Yeah, it's good.
Wasn't Michael Owen? Sorry, not Michael Owen. He's a footballer. He did the West
Some
End.
Some mothers do
version.
Have him.
Yeah, Michael Crawford.
Crawford.
Michael Crawford.
Yeah, no, there was a version, wasn't there? But no, yeah. this is an extraordinary film.
Yeah.
It really is fabulous.
I met Michael Crawford in the boardroom at Chelsea.
Love
when Everton were playing there because
he
was there with Mr. William Kenwright, Bill Kenwright,
yeah.
because Bill was putting on a show with Michael Crawford. Yeah, yeah. He's a nice guy, isn't he?
When he opened in Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, yes.
That was in 1987, and I know that because I was pregnant with my daughter, my first daughter.
Right.
I went along with my mum to see that opening show.
Wonderful.
And Steve Harley had recorded...
Steve Harley of Cockney Rebel
had recorded the main track.
Yes.
Which the song was, can't remember. But anyway, there was outrage because Steve Harley thought he was going to get the part.
Right.
Playing the Phantom.
Oh, really?
And it went to Michael Crawford.
Golly.
And nobody could really believe that Frank Spencer would be a plausible Phantom.
Yes.
But he was.
Oh, he was.
He was sensational.
He was sensational. I totally agree. And it goes on to say the fifth and sixth positions occupied by albums from George Ezra.
George
Ezra.
Yeah, he's got a big, deep voice. Yeah.
Is he? And
he's weird because he sounds black, but he is as white as they come.
Right.
And he sort of fake plays his guitar. He's a little bit eccentric, but yeah, the kids
like
love him.
Dusty Springfield, then. A male version of Dusty Springfield. She was said to have a black voice, wasn't she?
Well, she was.
And it also says the sixth position, which has been occupied for 2 years running, Queen.
Yeah.
People just don't stop buying
Queen
records.
People can't get enough of Queen. There will be a new film. There's definitely going to be another movie.
Right, okay. It says
and there has to be, because there is the taste for it.
Okay.
There's a thirst for Queen.
Okay.
They've never been more popular in their entire career.
Oh, I totally agree. It's unbelievable. The chart featured only 9 fresh albums, including Ariana Grande's Thank You Next. But, I mean, that's very selective audience. That's young girls, isn't it?
It's what is broadening. And I hate to say this, but I think that the Manchester Arena disaster did a hell of a lot for her career.
I bet it did, yeah. But, I mean, you know, I'm not being cruel and unkind. She just happened to be on the stage that night. And she's been very good, by the way, ever since.
Oh, she really has.
In the
way
that she's cared so much and tried so much to.
It was just wrong place, wrong time, wasn't it?
Yeah. The reason for the lack of new material is that most people are no longer interested in albums. Figures released by the BPI, British Phonographic Institution, I think that is.
Industry.
British Phonographic Industry, that's right, yeah. Show that the proportion of music bought as albums physical or digital, fell to just 24%. Now, this is quite interesting because I was doing some work in a studio, TV studio, actually, last week. And there was a guy there who is a rock promoter. And he's organising at the moment a new 80s tour, including people like, funnily enough, we were talking about her earlier, Tapau.
Carole Decker.
Carole Decker and Tapau. But all sorts of bands from that era, you know, Gold, who sang that, you know.
Tony Hadley and Spandau Ballet.
And all that kind of stuff. He's telling me all about it, you know.
Yeah, so Midyear and Captain Sensible and,
all these people from that era. You're absolutely right. I mean, there was a bit of...
Belinda Carlisle. She's always on those trips,
All that kind of stuff. But anyway, so we're talking about this. And then he was with another colleague there, and they were having a laugh about the fact that they just found out that morning that the Stones, the Rolling Stones, had gone into the studio to do their latest album. And the reason they were having a laugh is because nobody's aware of the Rolling Stones' last six albums because they've just, like, never got anywhere, you know what I mean? And they both sort of said to themselves, why do people like the Stones bother going and making new albums? You know what I mean?
Because it's what they do. They're musicians, and because there is that drive to write and create. But you're right. Mm. We only know Stones music from 50 years ago.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
When we go and see the Stones live, we want Brown Sugar.
Of course we do.
We don't want the latest little ditty conjured up last week.
And you're absolutely right. I've got this theory that the reason that you can't produce any great records anymore is because in that burst of energy in the 60s, the Stones, the Beatles, the Kinks, all those groups, and then in the 70s with Queen and all that kind of stuff, all the great musicians actually explored every single way of putting musical notes together where there's no way you can do it now to make any original songs.
True to some extent.
There will never be any original songs again.
True to some extent. McCartney still churns out original work.
Oh, yeah.
Egypt Station is a masterpiece.
Do you think so?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, well, I haven't listened
to it. Also, Black Star, David Bowie's final offering.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
The first time I heard that, I thought, oh, he's done a right turkey this time. But play it five more times and you discover
it.
Actually, this was his finest work.
Yeah, well, there you go. Right. Very interesting to know. But as the producer guy I was talking to said, Rolling Stones haven't really written a decent record for 45 years.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Right, okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today. We try to cover all the issues which, affect your lives, our lives, and everybody else's life. A lot of it is talking about pop stars, and one of the reasons for that, Leslie Ann, is because, of course, I still regard you as the rock chic writing queen of Fleet Street, as, of course, you were. But...
past tense?
No. You've now moved into books, and so I think it's about time we...
We still think of ourselves as journalists, though, don't we?
Oh, yeah, of course we do. But your book on Lennon, you made a reference to it either earlier in this podcast or the last one we did, is coming to fruition. Now, this must have been very hard work.
It has been the hardest book I've ever worked on. Mm-hmm. And I think I was, to begin with, as anybody would be, daunted by the enormity of the subject.
Yeah.
And it wasn't so much a question of where do you start, which is quite often the case when you begin a new book.
Yes.
But where do you stop?
Right.
You know, yes, of course, the person is deceased and there is a certain amount to say about that. Mm. But there is so much material. There are sets of encyclopedias about the Beatles, about every single Beatle.
Yeah.
There are university courses around the world that you can go on to study their music. So it was a question of finding my way through all the layers of John's personal story and choosing which ones I would write about rather than trying to do it all.
Well, I look forward very much to reading it, and I might even get an advanced copy and
you will.
And get the drop on everybody else. Now, a story I mentioned to you, and I didn't realise you were as aware of it as me. I like to follow obituaries. Now, that's not morbid or anything like that, but one of the reasons that I like to read obituaries in papers like The Times and The Telegraph, The Guardian, is they often cite heroes of the Second World War who now are all in their late 90s, if not early hundreds. So you often read about a boy who joined the RAF when he was 19, shot down over France when he was 21, escaped from a prisoner of war camp. I mean, just the most amazing things at 19, 20, 21 years of age, you know what I mean? And I read one recently about a boy who was shot down but terribly badly burnt in escaping from his Hurricane aeroplane, you know what I mean? And then spent the rest of the war in a hospital. And, you know, he was 24 when the war finished, but he'd spent 3 or 4 years in a hospital. And the sacrifices people made, and that's one reason I was attracted to them. But in going through those, you often come across other such amazingly interesting stories. And this is one about a bloke called Maurice Bailey. And my eye was drawn to the headline over this this obituary. Intrepid sailor who, with his wife, survived 117 days, that's nearly 4 months, adrift in the Pacific Ocean in one inflatable life raft. I mean, it just... How did that happen?
It's a famous story, wasn't it? Maurice and Marilyn Bailey.
Yeah.
She died some years ago in the early 2000s from cancer.
Right, yeah.
But she did survive another 30 years after they spent, as you say, 4 months
yes.
in a rotting rubber dinghy in the Pacific.
Yes.
And they befriended animals. They
do you know, this is amazing.
Extraordinary
pods
story.
Pods of whales and dolphins mm-hmm. and used to circle the boat and actually help them catch fish and all this. It's
because
amazing.
They had to eat a certain amount of these animals. And,
yeah.
You know, could you imagine yourself, I know you're an animal lover.
Yes.
Ripping the head off a turtle and consuming it raw? Could you do that?
Drinking the turtle's blood because
you know,
they had no other source of like liquid. Because,
they did turn vegetarian when they came.
Yeah.
They were discovered in the
yeah.
end. Four ships passed them
yeah.
on the ocean and didn't see them or pick them up.
Well, they had flares apparently, but the flares never got high enough over the, you know,
no.
the horizon to alert these ships. And
but in the end, a South Korean fishing boat picked them
yeah,
up.
Yeah, that's right. And
they were
doing things like they were pumping air into this one dinghy 12 times a day just to keep it afloat.
Yeah.
How perilously close were
yeah.
they to
it is miraculous.
Sinking in, you know, below the Pacific Ocean?
There was a book.
Unbelievable.
I haven't read it, but I'm going to get it and read it because it
yeah.
is an extraordinary story. He's just died, as you say. After her death,
yeah.
he survived until just, and he became a recluse.
Yeah.
And he was completely alone and lonely, but
yes.
happy because his most fulfilling and meaningful part of his life
yeah.
were those 4 months on the boat with her.
Yes.
And he couldn't imagine sharing his life with anybody else.
No.
But they did become vegetarians and he never
yeah.
ate an animal again. And
yeah.
I imagine it would have that kind of effect on you.
Utterly unbelievable. Although their situation seemed more hopeless with each passing day, they found solace in the animals that gathered around their life raft. Indeed, they effectively created an ecosystem. Fish fed on the barnacles that formed on the underside of their flimsy craft. Turtles and sharks circled them. Seabirds would land to have a rest. Dolphins would jump over the raft. They would hear the eerie cries of whales at night. I mean, this is all such amazing stuff. We found the animals companionable, and they helped us to alleviate our isolation. None showed any fear of us at all. After so many months with them, we felt just like sea creatures ourselves. And as if to underline the sacredness of this communion, resting seabirds would regurgitate fish that they'd caught at sea and plonk them down in the dinghy for Maurice and Marilyn to eat themselves.
But imagine having to eat all that raw flesh.
Yes.
This would turn you off. It almost suggests a divine intervention to me.
It does to me.
That they were saved by some almighty
yeah.
force.
Yeah.
It's an amazing story.
It is absolutely, utterly amazing.
Survival is all.
Yeah, yeah. I would have gone completely mad. I mean, how could you possibly... I would have gone mad with despair day after day after day for 4 months. And the other thing I can't quite get my head around is I didn't know you could be that isolated on this earth anymore. You know what I mean? I can imagine that well, how long ago was it, actually? That's
1973.
1973. Well, I can imagine it may be post the Second World War, you know, very isolated. But I thought since then there were shipping channels. I mean, what happened to things like satellites picking them up and all that kind of stuff?
Well,
they're
a tiny rubber
states.
Dinghy with no metal
yeah.
on it.
Yeah.
I think satellites rely on a metallic content, don't they?
I think
to be able to
right.
track
yeah.
something.
Yeah. I mean, I would say to myself, and I'm being a bit unkind here, but if you're mad enough to put all your belongings into a boat, they sold the house basically and said, let's go and sail around the world. Well, there's a very good chance you are going to die at sea. Because,
of course. These are not professional sailors.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not seasoned adventurers or
so
travellers.
So should we feel sorry? I had a friend, right, and you will probably know him as I do. He was a reporter on the Daily Mail. His name was John something. He had a sort of wispy...
That narrows it down.
Yeah, that narrows it down. A wispy sort of... fluffy sort of beard and glasses, quite tall guy. And he was a sailor. And... whenever we ever got together on jobs, and sometimes you'd be away for 3 or 4 days with somebody on a job in Europe or somewhere, or, you know, some terrible crime had taken place in the north of England or something, he was always talking about sailing, you know. And his sole ambition one day was to do that single-handed yacht race across the Atlantic. It happens once a year, doesn't it? I don't know either. I think you set off from the Isle of Wight or something, and it's single-handed, and it takes about 2 weeks. Because they're not big boats, you know, and all this. So he talked about this, and he said he was going to do it. And I said, well, when you say single-handed, like, when do you go to sleep? And he said, well, that's a great challenge, of course. You don't. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you actually sit in the same seat, you know, for about, like, 2.5-3 weeks, and you have all sorts of monitors that go beep, 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 you know, if there's a, you know, any sort of obstruction in your path or if the wind starts getting up. He said, so basically you sleep when you can, when you're pointing in the direction of America, if you see what I mean. But, you know, you'll be woken up at least, you know, once an hour, you know, to try and correct something. You know, something will tell you that there's, I don't know, bad weather approaching or something like that.
It's a bit like having a new baby, really.
Yeah. Just-
You don't sleep for a couple
no,
of years,
sleep.
Do you?
No, it's absolutely right. He said, it's just like that. He said, you know, you're walking around in a daze. Most of the, well, you're not walking. There's nowhere to go. It's a little boat, you know. But anyway, what happened to him, which we found quite funny at the time, because Fleet Street can be very cruel, can't it?
Oh, yeah.
His boat overturned about 300 miles short of America. And he got out and he scrambled onto the upturned, you know, hull of the boat and clung on for 2 days. And it was a great story. I mean, obviously, he wrote about it later in the Daily Mail, you know, this incredible journey and all that. But he said that the forces were trying to rip him off the hull. He was, you know, he was delusional because he'd had no sleep and all this kind of stuff. It's clinging onto the hull of his boat. And he was determined that somebody was trying to take him. You know, somebody was, some force. Because he was literally hanging on by his blood-soaked fingertips onto the boat.
And, oh, well, the other guy won then.
Well, I mean, hundreds of people do this, apparently. Mm. And only about half of them ever get there. The rest get shipwrecked, they get picked up. I'll tell you who did it once. Duran Duran lead singer.
Oh, Simon Le Bon.
And his boat was called Rum, wasn't it, or something? Do you remember?
It
sank.
They did that Rio...
they did the Rio thing. He was a
Rio
big
video,
sailor. But his boat actually sank. It hit something in the water and sank, and he was winched to safety. What was his boat called? It was some famous name that I think they named one of his songs after or something
it's
like that.
It's quite irresponsible of somebody,
well,
isn't it?
Well,
to assume.
Yeah.
There's an arrogance in someone,
yeah, well, somebody
who assumes that
me.
They can conquer
yeah.
the sea,
yeah. Yeah.
and
yeah.
if not, somebody will come to their rescue.
Yeah, that's right.
Say.
But we all thought it was terribly funny when we heard his boat turn. You know what I mean? We were on a pub in Fleet
wicked.
Street. Oh, you heard about old John. Was it Woodcock? Was that his name?
I don't know.
And we said, oh, what's happened? Bleeding boat's gone down, you know, 300 miles off, you know, Martha's Vineyard or something. Oh, well, OK. So we assumed he'd get rescued and all that. And then, you know, 24 hours later, no sign, you know.
Yeah.
But eventually he was rescued by another ship.
The ones who fascinate me are the
yeah.
women who
yeah.
do it single-handedly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a special kind of
a person, isn't it?
There
was a woman a few years ago.
Who was that? Tracy somebody,
yeah,
wasn't
Tracy
it?
Tracy somebody. And first of all, she did it on her own.
Yeah.
And then she
did it... Oh, with a bunch of women.
She did it in a catamaran called The Maiden, I remember distinctly, because it was an all-woman crew. And they won some, you know, round-the-world race in a catamaran. She did it on her own, and she lay off Portsmouth, where I live, for a day and a half until the wind was strong enough to bring her into Portsmouth Harbour because she didn't want to be towed in, you know what I mean?
Right.
And wanted to make the final entrance. And she became world famous. I think she was made a dame. I think she's now Dame Tracy Edwards. But I haven't heard from her for years.
No.
There was another one who
she started writing novels after doing her Round the World solo trip.
Don't remember her either.
No.
Anyway. Yeah, so there was another... guy I used to work with in Belfast called David Graves. He was a Telegraph reporter. Do you remember him?
No.
No, okay. Probably
before my time.
Yeah, exactly. and whenever he used to arrive in Belfast a lot of the time, and I was there on and off for 18 months during the Troubles and all that kind of stuff. So we got to know each other very well. But whenever he could, he would try and get off and do a bit of scuba diving because there's lots of, like, good water around Northern Ireland. Eh?
Have you ever done
no,
that?
No, no.
I did it once. My ears have never been the same since.
Well, I was going to say, so he said, no, I love scuba diving. And he'd actually, I tell you what, I stayed in St. Lucia once at a really nice hotel called the Anse Chasnay, and it was St. Lucia's top scuba diving location. Had a big school there, part of the hotel, you know. And every day, you know, the guy who ran it, you know, he was great. He used to have a few beers with him and all that. He said, and I know where you get me underwater, mate, in a, you know, in scuba diving or anything like that. I was terrified of drowning, you know, not drowning, terrified of oxygen not coming in. I think that came after watching Thunderball. You know Thunderball, the James Bond film,
yeah,
where the big fight takes place underwater?
Yeah.
And a bloke with a knife slashes your air line.
And, not for me, thanks.
Exactly. But anyway, so, get a long story short. So David was going on about... And all of a sudden, I suddenly read an obituary in the Telegraph, because I used to read every paper every day then, and David had gone to somewhere like Antigua or something and gone scuba diving and got trapped in a cave.
Oh, they're pretty dangerous, those places, on holiday.
You know, it's so shocking that these things happen.
Yeah.
I mean, why would you sail a boat across the Atlantic on your own? Or dive into the Caribbean Sea? On your own. Mm. He was on his own. He was exploring a cave. Mm. I mean, how mad is that?
Yeah, completely bonkers.
And what happened to you when you scuba dived?
Well, it's something you... It's like I jumped out of a plane once with a parachute. You know, the things you only do once.
Yes.
There's a list, isn't there?
Yes.
Yeah, no. It just... I felt horribly claustrophobic.
Yeah.
When I went down.
Yeah.
And, yeah, okay, I've done that. Been there, done that. Never doing that again.
No.
The same as I would never jump out of an aircraft again.
No, exactly.
Not unless I had to.
The last time I was in a lounge up at Goodison Park, you know, Everton, my team and all that, and I had a lovely lounge, you know, where you got lunch before the game and all that kind of stuff. The guy sitting on my left was quite a quiet sort of a character, and he was there sometimes and then he wasn't there and all that kind of stuff, and got talking to him. He was a North Sea deep sea diver.
Oh.
Right? And the reason he wasn't there sometimes was he was working in Saudi Arabia, you know, or I mean, he used to fly all over the world and work as a deep sea diver.
I tell you, he was a diver.
Yeah.
Who we know, Carol Malone's husband.
Really?
He was a guy called Marco, I think.
He's a little fella.
Yeah. And he was
a
sort of a police diver that he would go down in the Thames, of, you know, and drag bodies up and this kind of thing.
The guy I knew, you
can imagine when she met him.
Yeah, sure. But the guy I knew was Carol's husband. He was like a businessman. He used to go to work in London every day in a suit and all that.
No, that must have been a different one.
Must have been a different one.
Yeah, no, because she definitely married a diver.
Did she?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. But
The joke was the diva married the diver.
The diva married the diver, that's right, absolutely. But this guy I'm telling you about, right, he, by the way, the divers in the police diving teams, that is the worst job in the world.
Really?
They spend most of their time...
In mud.
In mud.
Unable to see.
They spend most of their time in water that is impenetrable for sight. Even with a torch, you can't see anything.
Yeah.
And they have
Disgusting job.
It's a terrible job. They have to do it by hand. If they're looking for a body in a canal or something. You know what I mean? It has to be done by hand because you can't see anything.
Why would anybody... It's a bit like being a... What do they call them? The paths that do post-mortems.
Oh, the pathologists.
Them.
Yeah.
Why would you choose to do that
God
for a
knows.
Living?
God
Why
knows.
Would you choose to cut people up and extract their organs for a living?
The very, very worst sort of medicine I can imagine.
Isn't that a strange kind of
but
mindset?
You know what they say? They say it's because it's so intriguing to be able to solve a murder. You know, a policeman is a policeman. A pathologist can solve a murder by saying they were hit by this weapon at that force at this particular time 3 hours ago, and they can actually solve murders. One last thing I want to talk to you about before we pack up today. Did you notice that the figures have just come in? Over the festive period, wind power dropped so low that it was being subsidised to the tune of about £1 million a minute because there was no wind, no turbines were turning. None of it was used to cook your turkey or...
Well, doesn't that just prove a point?
It just proves a point to be the national grid. It's all mad and we've got to look after it. Leslie Ann, I want to thank you again very much indeed for joining me. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you,
it's
been Michael.
A pleasure as always. People know a lot about diving now that they didn't know in those days.
All kinds
of
diving.
That mate of mine, by the way, from the lounge at Everton, he got paid £30,000 a month. He used to work 1 month on, 1 month off, OK? Because it's so intense. You work every day for 30 days on a job, you see what I mean? But he said that in some of the seas he worked in, idyllic. You know, there's no great tidal pull out in, you know, the Red Sea and all that kind of stuff.
There's always an upside.
But the North Sea, perilous and dangerous.
Yeah.
And lost mates there because you get swept away just like that, you know, and you have to tie yourself up with ropes to the feet of oil rigs and all that kind of stuff.
Dramatic.
But, I mean, dramatic and adventurous. But nevertheless, dangerous. Leslie Ann, we'll be together again in the studio very soon. I want to thank you all very much indeed. And please don't hesitate to get in touch. Leslie Ann, your Twitter address is?
@LAJWriter.
Lovely. And I am @MikeParry8. And also, you can get hold of us on the Gmail address, which is planetporkypod. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, something I know. Like that.
Yeah, it is.
It's a different it one
is.
Every time.
It is. PlanetPorkyPod @gmail.com.
Folks,
boom, thanks. Boom. Exactly. Folks, thanks for listening. Be with you again very soon. The reason I don't like the East is I don't like heat, and a lot of these places like Thailand are very hot and all that. But I don't like the culture and I don't like the food, you see.
Oh, I love Thai food.
Well, I don't mind Thai food.
A Thai green curry? Are you kidding?
No, I don't want to eat it for a week or two. All my instincts are West. I prefer the weather in New York and Washington because they have different temperatures in summer and winter. Excuse me. I prefer the food because I like hamburgers. I prefer the culture because they speak English. You know, I'm very sort of little England.
You're quite predictable in that way.
Yeah, I'm very predictable.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you, he was a diver who we know, Carol Malone's husband.
Really?
He was a guy called Marco, I think. He's some
a
sort of
Italian.
Yeah, and he was a sort of a police diver that he would go down in the Thames, of, you know, and drag bodies up and this kind of thing.
The guy I
All
knew.
All the jokes you can imagine when she met him.
Yeah, sure. But the guy I knew was Carol's husband. He was like a businessman. He used to go to work in London every day in a suit and all that.
No, that must have been a different one.
Must have been a different one.
Yeah, no, because she definitely married a diver.
Did she?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. But
well, the joke was the diva married the diver.
The diva married the diver, that's right, absolutely.
Tell me you've seen that film.
No, I haven't.
Oh, you should.
Barnum. No,
yeah,
I haven't.
Yeah, it's good.
Wasn't Michael Owen. Sorry, not Michael Owen, he's a footballer.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.